You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
In the communication sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on a CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
No, I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people you're trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special, you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. It's a sad indictment of organizations that try and lure consumers in on what at face value seems a pretty good deal, but then garrotes them with the fine print. Unfortunately, this is all too common in the world of technology, with broadband plans and mobile phone plans. It's becoming so much of a problem that the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission has stepped up its policing in the local market. Most of Australia's telcos have incurred the wrath of the ACCC over misleading and tricking consumers into buying their products or services. And currently, attention is being focused on Dodo, the Melbourne-based ISP, which resells bandwidth bought from other telcos. I suspect the ACCC's gaze will move again to Optus, as the company releases a new range of mobile phone caps, which on the whole seems terrific. But it's only when you read the fine print do you realise the trap that will snare those who choose not to study their plans in detail. As reported by CNET, Optus cap plans now come in four flavours, $19, $49, $59 and $79, with the two more expensive plans offering free SMS and MMS. The plans all offer generous call allowances too. The $49 and $59 plans offer $680 worth of calls per month, but only half of this allowance can be used on local and national calling, what Optus calls Optus to Anyone. The other half of the allowance is dedicated to Optus calls, that is, for calling other Optus GSM mobile numbers and Optus fixed line phone numbers, and can only be spent after the first half of your spend has been reached. This means that before you reach the first $330 of calling allowance each month, your calls to other Optus customers are counted as Optus to Anyone. And after you've exceeded $330, you'll only be able to call Optus customers for the rest of the month, or be billed at the standard rate for your plan, 80 cents per minute on the $49 and $59 plans. After comparison with others, the ambiguity of what Optus is offering becomes obvious. Separating the call value of Optus to Optus calls from standard calls is a great idea for a cap plan, but not letting Optus customers spend Optus to Optus credit in the same time they spend Optus to Anyone credit is sneaky at its best, as is advertising the not factually correct $680 worth of calls. So as the 120mm cannons of the ACCC warship take focus on Optus, here's a timely reminder to consumers to remember if it looks too good to be true, then it probably is. And when it comes to telcos, be sure to read the fine print, because once you've signed the contract, that's it. You're in 2 years or more of hell.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Adam Turner shares his Star Trek experience on the third biggest movie screen in the world. eBay takes on iTunes in the online music game. Telstra's guard changes again. And the release candidate of Microsoft's new operating system, Windows 7, is now a week old. So we'll take a look at its reception in the broader community. First up, though, here's the latest happenings in the world of technology for this week with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, the Telstra board's big shake-up. Dodo is issued with court-enforceable undertakings by the ACCC. Microsoft warns of bogus Windows 7 release candidates. Apple sets its sights on Twitter. And Australia's NBN blueprint will be scrutinised at an industry forum. Welcome to Tech Talk News. In a big day for Telstra, Chairman of the Board of Directors Mr. Donald McGauchie resigned on Friday following the announcement that Mr. David Thodey will be the next Chief Executive Officer for the telco. Board member Ms. Catherine Livingston will be Telstra's new chairperson, while Mr. Thodey will replace Mr. Sol Trujillo once he steps down at the end of June. Ms. Livingston told reporters on Friday morning that Mr. Thodey's grasp of the fundamentals of technology and deep appreciation of customer needs made him the right person to lead Telstra.
It's really important that we build on the investment that's been made, and that takes us to the next phase. So I think that constant change is necessary, but you also have to phase it and understand what your focus is as you go forward, and I think this gives us the opportunity to move into the next phase.
Mr. Thodey said he was delighted to be the next CEO of Telstra.
It's such a wonderful company, and it really is a great Australian company, and we have so many wonderful people, committed, dedicated and very competent people, and I'm excited about the opportunity to take this business forward.
Mr. Thodey went on to say that Telstra's strategy would remain unchanged and that the company would continue to provide customers with world-class product and services. Mr. Thodey's appointment is seen by industry analysts as a much-needed breath of fresh air for the telco. Telstra's obstructionist and unproductive relationship with two federal governments under the leadership of Mr. Trujillo is now seen by many as being over. Australian internet service provider Dodo has been forced to offer refunds to customers who were allegedly lured in by the promise of a free computer or cash. The Australian Competition and Consumer Commission issued a court-enforceable undertaking to Dodo for offering so-called free incentives to customers, including fuel cards, ASUS netbooks and cash transfers, between October last year and March. The ACCC, however, determined that the incentives were not free because Dodo offered other plans without the incentives that were comparable in value and service but cost up to $30 a month less. The ACCC's chairman, Mr. Graeme Samuel, said in a statement that the telecommunications industry has had sufficient time to implement the necessary changes to address these practices, and that those elements of the industry that wish to test the ACCC's resolve to reform the industry's errant practices are now on notice. Last week's announcement came after Dodo was fined $147,000 in October last year following an investigation by the ACMA into alleged offshore marketing calls to numbers listed on the Do Not Call register. Microsoft has warned early adopters of its Windows 7 operating system to ensure they get copies from a trusted source. Mr. Joe Williams, General Manager of Worldwide Genuine Windows at Microsoft, said in an interview on Thursday that the company had received reports of illegitimate distributions of the release candidate of Windows 7 being offered in a way that was designed to infect a customer's PC with malware. A release candidate of Windows 7 was made available just over a week ago as Microsoft prepared its much-anticipated Vista replacement operating system for release. Mr. Williams went on to say that anti-piracy protections built into Windows 7 would thwart the spread of illegal copies, building on Windows Genuine Advantage technology, and also said that software piracy exposes users to identity theft, system crashes, and data loss. Legitimate versions of the Windows 7 release candidate can be downloaded from the Microsoft.com website. Apple, with $40 billion in cash reserves, has reportedly locked its sights on popular micro-blogging service Twitter, according to industry speculation in Silicon Valley. According to many news aggregation sites last week, Apple is close to cutting a deal for Twitter for the measly sum of $700 million, just petty cash for a company that delivered over $1 billion in profits in the last quarter. Twitter's user base has increased to nearly 30 million in recent weeks and is currently growing at 40% a week. These are amazing growth figures, helped in no small way by Oprah Winfrey and other celebrities joining Twitter this year. Twitter executives originally said they wouldn't sell at any price. However, the prospect of a deal with Apple is said to have changed their thinking, according to one Wall Street journalist. There is also speculation that if Apple purchased Twitter, the whole concept of Twitter as an independent internet operation would disappear and that users may desert the service in droves. And blueprints of Australia's proposed national broadband network will be scrutinised at an industry forum later this month. The communications industry's peak body, the Communications Alliance, says the forum is critical to ensure the NBN delivers the capabilities, services and outcomes required to drive innovation, efficiency and an enhanced lifestyle for Australia. According to IT Wire, the 2 half-day NBN Industry Connection Forums will kickstart the industry's response to the government's proposed regulatory reforms, which will facilitate the NBN rollout. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Dr. Ron here. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Ron, for the evening.
Windows 7, big news. This is probably about the biggest thing that's happening so far.
Yes, I understand. I can do that, and I have done that, but the damage is done.
But I'm assuming that each of them got a slightly different culture, and the way you approach them is different.
RTFM.
Read the flaming manual.
TV's new blockbuster video on demand service looks quite impressive, right up until the point where it won't play the movie.
He no longer works for the company.
Oh, doesn't he? Oh, dear. Take that out of the podcast for me, Graham, won't you? He's a good lad.
So sometimes it lasts a day and sometimes it just doesn't.
Exactly.
I don't think Telstra gives two hoots about that.
Who is that mad lid?
I don't know.
Did you ask them who killed JFK?
I did. And they told me that Elvis had left the building.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. Yes, back again for another week. Welcome to you all, wherever you might happen to be listening around this wonderful planet of ours, whether you're on the stream listening to us on the internet, whether you're in New Zealand listening to us up there at the North Island. Good evening to you all, whether you're listening to us here in good old sunny Melbourne, which is dark at the moment. Did you know? Evening, Dr. Ron. What's happening?
Hello. It is dark at the moment.
It is.
Very dark.
Yeah,
it's very dark. It's getting quite late in the evening here now, with daylight saving having finished some weeks ago.
I know, leaving home and it's leaving work to come here, and it's dark. It used to be sunny and warm.
Now and you get home and it's dark.
Absolutely,
it's crazy stuff. How was your week?
Oh, look, it was so far so good. We're only a day into it, but we had ups and downs of our internet service provider providing service. It was there 1 minute and gone the next. Have you had that issue before?
I have.
At home?
And I do, and I use the same internet service provider that you do, and I had the exact same problem on the same day, or the day before, I think.
Yeah. I looked on their forum and they pointed to Telstra Wholesale saying, it's not us, it's them, look.
There's always someone else to blame.
Nothing like backpack. Well, that's what this industry's all about, isn't it? The telecommunications side. I think that's what the ACCC are, amongst other things, having a bit of a look at. So, anyway, we'll wait and see. Poor old Dodo there in their line of fire. The Optus, they're about to be in the line of fire, as I alluded to in the opening of the show this evening. So watch out, the fine print in particular. Dr. Graham Callaghan joins us this evening.
Yes, Andrew.
Yeah. Andrew. Interesting week.
Yeah.
It's early days. No recalls, no nothing. Peaceful weekend,
yeah.
Can't complain about that. Did you have internet across the course of the weekend?
No, my internet worked for most of the weekend, which was, It was handy, yeah.
It really is. You feel like you've lost your left leg when you don't have internet at home. What am I going to do? And you have to revert to the mobile broadband.
Then again, you wouldn't want things to be boring and predictable, would you?
No, reliable's good though.
You'd be out of a job, Graeme, if everyone's internet just worked all the time.
If everything continued to work, that's right. The whole industry of technicians would be out of work.
There'd be no need for this program.
No.
Well, that's very true, isn't it? We'd be redundant.
We would.
Yeah. Justin.
Andrew.
How you going? You're wearing the company T-shirt tonight, I notice.
I am.
The white MacBook. You can probably see it on the webcam. Are we live to air on the TV, boys?
Just yes.
Oh, they're working on it. That's why.
almost. Keep your eye on ustream.tv/techtalkradioau. You'll see a little button there that starts flashing that says live now, and you click on the go to show page link. That will be there in a few moments.
I won't do it on the studio laptop, otherwise we'll end up in howls of feedback. I've learnt my lesson from about two or three shows back. I then couldn't turn it off.
Well, anyway. No, we had the whole show delayed 20 seconds while it was live. Didn't make any sense to anyone.
So before we hit the Coro, we've got to send out a cheerio to a couple of the Tech Talk Radio people who, in their own right, did some pretty amazing things during the course of the week. Firstly, Lydia Davis managed to bring down the New York Times.
That was a good effort. That was a very good effort on
Lydia's
part.
Well done, Lyd. Yes, she was blogging about, what do you call them? Injections of HTML variety.
On the McAfee website.
That's right. She was playing around there. And then when she was writing her article, she actually left it in plain text how to do it rather than, plain text rather than putting in a JPEG. And then she writes for another company, and then the New York Times picked up the blog from that other company, and yeah, guess what?
Everything linked back to her company.
Absolutely. So she's become notorious, if that's the word. She's hit the front page of a few technical blogging things, and done exceptionally well for herself. So there you go. Well done, Lyd. She will be in Australia from the 3rd of July.
Is she going to be joining us live?
She'll be sitting in one of the chairs in front of the webcams and all that sort of stuff, so that'll be lots and lots of fun.
That'll be a lot of fun.
Yep, letting her out of Palo Alto. Whether they let her back in is another thing, but anyway, we'll soon see. Adam Turner, he's... a view from the couch. Traditionally, coming up, we're going to be talking about Star Trek tonight because we all went to see Star Trek during the course of the week.
And we saw it on the third biggest screen in the Southern Hemisphere. We're going to be talking a little bit about that. But Adam, it's his birthday on Thursday. Happy birthday to Adam. Happy birthday to Adam.
Happy birthday, Adam.
And in the interest of
How did we find that out?
There's a little birdie floating around. But anyway, tweet, tweet. In the interest of national security, we won't actually reveal his age on the radio. So, happy birthday to Adam. So everyone who wants to, when he comes up on the chat tonight, I'm on the wrong screen. If he's on the chat, wish him a happy birthday.
I don't think he's there yet. No, he's not. Good. If you'd like to chat to us live, go to chat.techtalkradio.com.au. You can talk to the panellists while we're putting the program together.
Anyway, lots to talk about tonight. Let's kick off with the correspondence that needs to be tabled this evening. Dr. Ron.
TARDIS3 on the forum says, in recent years, there have been more and more devices that incorporate an iPod dock. A handy addition if you have an iPod. It means you can listen to your iPod or iPhone and charge it at the same time. So whether your iPod or iPhone is partially charged or fully charged, by using a dock it will continue to be charged or trickle charged as it is used. TARDIS says, I think this shortens the life of the battery. Of course, I realise the batteries used in the iPod or iPhone are not as bad as they were in the past. However, TARDIS's experience with batteries in all devices, especially laptops and iPods, is that they deteriorate unless you utilise the battery until the device needs to be charged. Tata says the iPod dock industry is huge and growing all the time. Of course, he loves the convenience of the dock, but doesn't think that people realise the consequences of using said dock. What do the panel think about this? Can it be discussed on a future show, perhaps? The answer to the second question is yes.
Or a current show, even.
Or a current show. The first question. Graham, what do you think about this?
I think that lithium-ion batteries, which are the most modern type of rechargeable batteries that you've got in your new mobile phones and your new iPods, I don't think they really suffer from this problem to any significant degree.
Now, the current technology that battery technology that Apple uses in its iPhones and iPods, that's lithium-ion batteries, is it?
I assume it is. I get
JD?
Yes, it is. Yes. In fact, on the forums, I did a bit of a retrospective of all the phones I've owned and what type of batteries they had. And the Nokia, I'm trying to remember what I put in there. You need to look it up now. The Nokia 6600, I think it was the first lithium-ion battery I had in a phone, and it died a horrible death a number of times.
What, the phone or the battery?
The battery.
Yeah.
Phone kept surviving, but new batteries required fairly regularly. But then the HTC iMate or the XDA2, depending where you buy it from, was the next generation phone I used with a lithium ion battery, and it survived 4 years constant charge on my desktop charger, in my car, at home on another desktop charger. It was virtually never off charge, but when I needed it to be wireless and not connected, it would give me a couple of days worth of work, which for those sorts of phones was
couple of days. That's excellent. Mm. It's very good.
In standby.
What happened to your HTC? It gives you a couple of hours.
Mine is a disaster. Yeah, but that's very good. So that's using lithium ion as well.
Yeah, I concur. The old batteries, the old
nickel cadmium, the NICADs.
NICD, I think they had on the batteries. Yeah. They had, if you didn't look after them, they would certainly suffer from what we call memory effect, where it would remember its lowest charge and remember its highest charge, and once you came below the threshold of either or, that was it. Battery cooked, yep. You're done. So, but these new batteries are fantastic that you find in mobile phones and I guess in some of the Apple products, where they're designed to be topped up on a semi-regular basis, because you're throwing them on your car charger when you jump into the car, then charge them at the office when you're sitting down there, so that whenever you're out and about, you've got a full battery. And I think it's great.
Yep. I've done this with my current phone and my phone that I had before that, the battery, with my pattern of usage of the phone, I'm a medium user, not a heavy user, not a really light user. It does get a lot of use during the day. The phone would last a couple of days on that. But I would recharge it every night anyway, and my habit is to put the phone on the charger at home and recharge it overnight and use it the next day. And the battery in my previous phone lasted until it was well and truly due for replacement, and until the phone was due for replacement for other reasons. So,
a moderator on the forum says that his lithium ion for his NEC Versa is only 2 years old. It used to give greater than 3 hours, but now only 15 minutes.
Hmm.
I just suppose it depends what
what sort of use you put the battery to, what sort of pattern or behaviour you read in terms of how often you use it versus charging it. But in theory, with a lithium ion, it should be pretty good.
Yeah.
And I don't know what they do with laptop
batteries. There's other people coming up on the chat as well saying they're having similar experience with laptop batteries. Now, laptop batteries I haven't had a great deal of experience with, so
no, mine's been good.
Not in personal use anyway.
I've had no issues with my laptop batteries and the ones that I've had, which...
I mean, there's certainly...
Went, 2 years down the track, it still runs the same duration, maybe slightly less than the previous one, so I haven't had too many issues.
And there's certainly quality differences from battery to battery, too. You can get batteries that do behave well, and other batteries that are made less well, even though they're the same chemistry, still lithium-ion battery, that maybe misbehaves a little bit, that might not have been manufactured as well.
You know, one battery that everybody has that you really should look after is your car battery.
Mm. Yes. I cook them all the time.
Do you? Yeah, well, you probably would. The problem with car batteries is that they like being charged. You know, same sort of treatment as the new modern cell batteries that we have in our laptops and mobile phones. But the thing that kills them is when the kids leave the interior light on overnight.
That'll do it.
And it slowly drains the battery to the point of no chargeable return.
Yes, those sorts of batteries and the same sort of batteries are used in things like UPS devices for computers, uninterruptible power supplies. It's a lead acid chemistry.
Backup batteries in and burglar alarms and things.
Exactly right. The one thing they really don't like is being deeply discharged. Yes, yeah. If you keep them charged up, and if you discharge it, you charge it immediately. Then they last quite well and perform very well. But they do not like being deeply discharged, which is the opposite of the old nickel cadmium, which did like being deeply discharged.
Mm. You used to deep cycle them, didn't you?
That's right. Exactly.
Remember them correctly?
Yes.
So there you go. There's a bit of a battery spiel this evening.
Yeah, we might try and do some research and see if we can turn up anyone who's actually. Run the experiments to find out.
Brian Ackley, he's on the show. He'd probably be good.
Took the words right out of my mouth, Andrew. Now, if you Google, I won't try and read the homepage, but Google the words Brian, B-R-Y-A-N, and Ackley is his surname, A-C-K-E-R-L-Y, and a radio call sign, VK3YNG, or the word batteries, you'll find the Brian Ackley homepage. Now, Brian has done extensive research into batteries. Some very, very thorough, very scientific research, and he's actually been a guest on our program some time ago, next couple of years ago. We might try and get him back on.
When we had him in, he was talking about alkaline batteries and carbon batteries that the normal supermarket double A batteries of all the different types, and whether the cheaper ones actually are cheaper or what do you get your most use for the dollar out of those batteries?
You've got to remember back. Didn't he say you got most bang for your buck from those big packs you bought at the supermarket, like the 10 or 20 battery packs on a per unit basis? They were the most cost-effective, regardless of they didn't have the highest capacity of storage.
In the same device, in the same amount of use, it was the best runtime per dollar. Yeah. And I guess the reason for that is that any of the alkaline batteries, even whether it be the brand names that say they last longer than anybody else, or some of the generic ones, as long as it was that alkaline formulation. So the cheap alkaline battery was the best way to go, and buying them in bulk was the way to get them cheap.
All right, batteries, there we go.
TARDIS, hope that answers your question. Now, Nick via email says, "Hi guys, I've been a fan of your show for a few years now." That's very kind, Nick.
Hi, Nick.
He listens mainly to the podcast version. However, it seems to be getting worse trying to download the show. The best I can get is around 60 kilobits per second.
Is this the Optus guy? He's on Optus?
Yeah. And it's taking over 20 minutes to download.
Change your ISP. You'll be right.
This Take a deep breath and jump. We all did. This is on Optus cable. Last night, I downloaded a movie. 700 megabytes took just under an hour to download. 45 megabytes, roughly from your site, takes ages. Is it just a Tuesday night thing when it is the most popular time to download? Or should I wait for later in the week? Thank you for the email, Nick. What are your thoughts on this?
Good, he's looking at Graham.
I'm looking at Graham. I'm about to say, Andrew.
I don't know. I'd like to hear some feedback on whether changing the night of the week does affect it. And we might be able to send an email across to our hosting provider and let them know. One of the effects that might be happening...
Windows 7.
Is that
on a Tuesday night?
People are downloading Windows 7. Well, it took Tassie off air the other night, so why wouldn't it slow other providers down?
Yes, if we become popular, we can flood the links on a Tuesday.
Absolutely.
our audio files are all hosted overseas in America.
K can't afford to do it here in Australia.
Yes. So it may be that when you know maybe the movie file you're downloading was coming from a lot of sources, or some local sources and some overseas sources or something like that. I'm not sure. You're getting a bit of extra speed there. But, yeah, overseas links can tend to be a bit slow sometimes.
I've never normally had a problem downloading the show because on our Telstra resold service that Dr. Ron and I have, I can't speak for Dr. Ron, but whenever I've downloaded it, I've always got the fastest that I get out of the United States, which is anywhere from around 200 to 300 kilobits per second, and I've never known it otherwise. So
I don't have this experience. I have the experience of uploading the show. So
yeah, you do.
I normally hit the upload limit of my ADSL connection and max that out.
There are a lot of variables, Nick, when you're talking about
huge
download speeds.
Variables.
The other thing that came to my mind as well is that you are on Optus cable, and Optus, well, it has a good network, but the issue there is that you're sharing that piece of cable, Nick, with everybody else in your street and possibly everyone else in a dozen streets around you. And if it's the busy time on Tuesday night and there's 15 or 20 or 30 other people on the cable, it's going to impact on your download speed, not just of the Tech Talk Radio podcast, but anything you're trying to download far and wide. So maybe try it a different time. Try it on a Thursday night, like you said, or let us know if there's other things that are impacted as well on Tuesday night.
Interested to hear what other listeners may be experiencing out there, so let us know. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au.
Thank you for the correspondence, everybody.
Email address. Hey, anything else, Dr. Ron?
No, that's all for this week.
Welcome. If you'd like to table something on the Tech Talk Radio opening section of the program, send us an email at the email address, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au, and we'll talk about it on the beginning of the show. Anyway, let's hit the rundown. Very unusual for us, but we'll do that. In fact, let's not. Let's talk about something else. Sony has been boned by their biggest customer. Did you hear about this?
This isn't in the rundown. For it.
No, this is not in the rundown. I just came across this before. I thought, that's interesting.
What's happened to Sony?
Well, Sony's biggest customer, JB Hi-Fi, has said that they're not happy, Jan, with Sony Australia's expansion plans into Sony Central branded stores that are now popping up across Australia. Have you been to the Sony store in town? They're everywhere. Well, when I say everywhere, every town, I think, has a Sony store these days.
No, I haven't, no.
But they're sort of starting their own shops and selling solely their own products in the Sony store, and JB's not happy with that. A search of the business registration database at ASIC recently revealed 19 registered Sony Central stores, which they called the Sony Shop Proprietary Limited, and the CEO of JB Hi-Fi, Richard Ektrez, if that's how you, if I can't pronounce your name, but he said that Sony is the biggest customer of JB Hi-Fi and they're losing a bit of their market share because everyone's going to the Sony Shop instead. I thought that was quite interesting to see how a major corporation treats its biggest reseller.
Yeah, well,
especially in these days.
There's nothing new about that.
It wouldn't happen with Apple, would it?
Well, it did, of course.
Did it?
Yeah, they used to sell into Harvey Norman and Myers and David Jones, and then they
ripped
it all out.
Yeah, well, at least they ripped it all out. They didn't leave it there for some poor person to try and make some form of margin on it.
Yeah, I mean, they're still back in Myers again now, but
in JB Hi-Fi too, but I don't think there's an issue there, is there?
I don't think so.
Well, we'll see what happens. In other interesting news, just before we do hit the rundown, ISP, iiNet, remember how they were in front of the federal court over copyright infringement
in the not too distant past?
Yep. Well, the New South Wales federal court will no longer be called to test a contentious legal claim that ISPs directly infringe copyright laws by providing services to individuals who illegally share files on peer-to-peer file networks. Is that good? It's a very hard thing to prove, isn't it?
It is a very hard thing to prove.
But you've also made the point that, you know, you can't attack a telephone company for someone conspiring to do naughty
phone
company. How can you hold an ISP to ransom unless, of course, these things are stored on their servers?
In the United States, they have a sensible precedent which says, I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head, but it just says that telecommunications carriers, internet service providers, are not liable for the traffic that they carry. If they go to all reasonable steps to make sure they've got terms and conditions in place that say you can't do anything illegal with this, then they can't be expected to listen to every telephone call or monitor every piece of data that their customers transmit or download or use or say or send. So we haven't got anything like that here yet. There's so much of this is untested here at the moment.
Exactly. The birthday boy's joined us on the chat. If you want to come and wish him happy birthday, Adam Turner is there on the, on our chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Evening, Adam. Okay, let's talk about Telstra in the news. Obviously, we have a changing of the guard, both at a CEO level and also at a board level.
We have to make an apology. We made a bum call, didn't we, a few weeks ago?
I did. You can blame me. Point the finger at me. I take the rap.
No, we tipped John Stanhope as being the new CEO of Telstra,
yeah, chief financial officer. But that's right. Wasn't to be.
No, he's he is, however, going to be appointed as an executive director to the board, Mr. Stanhope. Yes, but no, lots of Telstra news during the week. Certainly, everyone was abuzz with the announcements, the shake up to the board.
So McGackie's gone.
Yes, he's gone.
Now, he was the man who recommended, and excuse me if I'm wrong here, and please don't hold it against me. My understanding from history books past is that McGackie was there as one of Howard's men, if I'm not to be mistaken.
One of Howard's men. Well, he was always very closely associated with Sol. He had a lot to do with Sol Trujillo coming
Exactly. And he was, So I think this changing of the guard is potentially the best thing that Telstra can do. They can literally do the washing of the blood from the hand, saying, that was then, this is now. New line in the sand. We have a new playing field. The fibre network is coming in. There's rumours that the Telstra are actually thinking of selling some of its equipment and plant to the new federal government's fibre company, which will be interesting to see what happens. And if you think about that, what do? They've got a choice. We can legislate to take it or legislate to gain access to Telstra things, or maybe we can do things differently. And this is the challenge that the new Telstra regime is going to face, and that is building the brand, because the brand has suffered terribly.
It has.
Under Sol Trujillo's recent rule. So much so, that it's sort of become what was once an amazing Australian company. Australians now sort of tend to bash it a little bit and tall poppy it and do things like that. So,
well, that's right. The industry analysts are cautiously optimistic about these new announcements. They think that obviously the relationship between Telstra and the federal government was extremely unproductive, was very obstructionist during the reign of Sol. But now everyone is looking at these new appointments with some optimism. So I've now got, Mr. McGackie has resigned as the chairman of the board, and now a board member, Ms. Catherine Livingston, is going to be Telstra's new chairman. And Mr. Thodey is going to replace Sol once Sol steps down at the end of June.
So what's Thodey's credentials?
Mr. David Thodey. He's been around for a long time. Miss Livingston
not
said he,
Toady Warlock on our chat.
No, Miss Livingston said he had a grasp of the fundamentals of technology and he had a deep appreciation of customer needs.
I think that's going to be a good asset.
Well, it is. He's been around for a long time in corporate circles, and he's well respected by the government, and he's certainly comes with a different, very much a different feel to the Sol Trujillo feel.
So you've got to still remember that the Australian government is still a majority shareholder in Telstra through the Future Fund and all that sort of stuff. So What say the separation? What do you think is going to happen here? Anyone got any suggestions? Because that's been touted. We'll put it this way. It hasn't been denied. When I think Kevin Rudd was recently asked about potential separation, he just did the great political answer saying, we'll look into everything and yada, yada. What do you think? Wholesale, resale? And how do you think it'll happen, if anyone has any suggestions?
We may have to wait until these changes pan out. These changes that were announced on Friday aren't actually going to take place. Oh, no, that's not entirely true. The Ms. Livingston's now the new chairperson, effective immediately, the new chairman, I understand. But Mr. Thodey's not going to be the CEO until Sol leaves, which is in June, end of June. So it might be some time yet. The government might just wait and see what happens with these changes and to see exactly how productive the relationship becomes in the short term. If they're still at a deadlock, then they may have to legislate to make changes.
Customer service, always been an issue with the company. Obviously, a bit more customer focus is not going to go astray. Now's the opportunity, wouldn't you say, as we head long into this new fibre network and new resources that are potentially going to come online in the next 5 years?
Well, if they want to keep customers and keep them off the new national broadband network as it gets rolled out, absolutely.
Well, that's right, because the playing field is now level. It wasn't up until a recent announcement for the FTTH, but now it is.
Mm.
Yeah, it's interesting times. Anyway, watch this space, I guess, as the new regime takes its place and we get new policies rolled out, new people come in and do new jobs.
The other thing, interesting announcement, which was made on the same day by Telstra, it was sort of overshadowed a little bit by the shake-up with the CEO and the chairman and everything else. There's a board member, former James Hardy executive, Mr. Peter Wilcox. I don't know if you heard about this. He also tendered his resignation.
Really?
In the wake of a finding against him by the New South Wales Supreme Court.
Is this a competition to see who's quit Telstra? Because there was another one today, went as well.
Well, indeed. Yeah, so the court found that Mr. Wilcox breached the Corporations Act. With the, it's all to do with the establishment of an asbestos victims compensation fund in 2001 from when he was a board member at James Hardy. Now, he's been a director of Telstra since 2006. Apparently, he's going to stay on until the company's AGM in November. That was the other news. That was sort of pushed down the headlines a little bit, if you like. So, but it wasn't just the CEO announcement. There was a lot going on last week with Telstra.
There was indeed, and there was another departing of another American too, who's, I was just trying to find the Telstra press release that came out today, but I couldn't do it in the moment that you did your spiel there, so another one bites the dust there as well. So, but it's good, we've got, I guess, locals now running the local telephone company, and that's potentially a good thing all round. Microsoft patching a flaw in PowerPoint. I thought these things would all sort of been had the bugs ironed out of them by now. Because how long's PowerPoint been around for? But people keep finding a way to sneak something in and executing code and doing malicious, nasty things. And I guess this is no different. Microsoft is preparing to issue a patch, which, guess what? The vulnerability lies in a component of PowerPoint. When exploited, can allow an attacker to remotely install malware on the targeted system. And this is probably most applicable to those people who send PowerPoint presentations about, look at my this, look at my that, in those funny PowerPoint presentations that we get in email. Yep. Click on that and you're gone.
And that's the inevitable result of this, that now that Microsoft have patched it, they've made everybody aware of it, so the bad guys will be taking advantage of your unpatched machine if you don't apply this patch by sending out emails that appear to contain a fun PowerPoint attachment.
Graham, will this error or this hole be repaired if you have your Office updates turned on your Windows computer?
I believe it will, yes. Now, that's an important point because Windows comes with Windows Update, which it tries to convince you to turn on automatically to automatically do Windows Update. But you have to be protected against this issue, you also have to have Office updates. And the best way to do that is to go, open up Internet Explorer, go to the Windows Update website using the link in Explorer, and it'll offer you the option to upgrade Windows Update to Microsoft Update.
Ah.
And Microsoft Update will update your Office programs and all your other Microsoft products on your machine as well.
Warlock in the chat is asking, isn't it Microsoft Update now? So the answer is yes. We used to have separate Windows updates and Microsoft Office, the Office Suite updates.
Yes.
It's all rolled into the one now.
Yep, you can get Microsoft Update, which allows you to get these Office updates through the same automatic update feature that Windows uses to update itself.
There you go. Now you know.
Or you just use openoffice.org, Impress.
That's right. You impressed some people using that at a presentation the other day, didn't you?
They were very impressed.
Yeah.
I was using Impress.
Yeah.
I said, I hope you're not using PowerPoint there. I said, no, sir, I am not.
If you've got PowerPoint on your machine, even if you've only got things like the PowerPoint viewer and the word viewer because you're using Impress, then you still want to make sure that you've got the Microsoft update turned on so that you're protected if someone does send you a file.
Yeah, so just be wary when you open those PPT things that you think are a good laugh, especially if you don't know who's sent, not if you know who sent it, but where it's originated from.
That's an important point. People say, be careful if you don't know the person who sent it to you, but it'll come from somebody you know, because the way these things spread is they infect your friend's machine and your email address is in your friend's machine's address book.
My wife was complaining the other day, amongst other things, about the level of spam that was hitting her mailbox on an email address, which she's kept
so
close to
everybody else who has an email address in the entire world, all my customers.
Yeah, well, she's kept this one very close to her chest, and now she's exceptionally disappointed that the spammers have got it, and the level of spam. Ever since she's become involved in a particular community group, her email address was out there in other members, and so someone's machine has been compromised, and as a result, they've got all the email
addresses. Or an email address has been harvested somehow. Someone has sent an email to a number of people, maybe to a dozen, and included her on it, and it's been there in plain black and white, and a machine has added it to
it. 9 times out of 10, the way this happens is you've got a friend who's done something dumb, and they've clicked on one of these links that they shouldn't have clicked on, and they've got the machine full of spyware, they haven't done their Windows updates.
Exactly.
They haven't, you know, they've haven't put on a proper anti-spyware, antivirus package.
And I bet you that person doesn't listen to our show.
No, they don't. No. And they don't listen to anybody. They don't listen to advice.
While we're talking about Microsoft, I don't know whether we can use the word Microsoft and Mother Teresa in the same sentence, but nonetheless, for the first time ever, Mother Teresa has got a mention in our chat. So in relation to what you were talking about in Telstra there before, Dr. Ron. So, yeah, come along and read up chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
You don't go to techtalkradio.com.au. That's something maybe we could be there.
Now, while we're talking about Windows, Windows 7, there's complaints from the rivals. You know, here we go. It's become release candidate, and obviously it's been out on the streets for a week now. Microsoft's new operating system, fresh complaints from those in the browser industry that says Microsoft's Internet Explorer is giving, or quoting from the Financial Times, that Microsoft's Internet Explorer is giving the system an unfair advantage. Now, I thought that Microsoft said in Windows 7, now, Graham, you can confirm this, can you turn off IE?
You can certainly make it not the default anymore, so that when you click on a random web page link, it opens up a different web browser of your choice. Microsoft have said you can turn it off. I don't know quite what that means. I haven't tried to turn it completely off because I don't want to. I want it there for those very few sites that are built to only use IE.
It's annoying, isn't it? Because there are a lot of sites which still are browser picky. You know, you have to be running a certain browser to actually access the full gamut of a site.
You certainly can easily run another web browser on Windows 7. I mean, I'm running Windows 7 beta. I haven't upgraded the release candidate yet. But my browser of preference is not IE, and I'd have no trouble running that on it. But the advantage is that it comes with it, I think, is really the only advantage. That when you get out of the box...
There was an antitrust issue. Yeah. I believe IE8 was turn-offable for this very reason. We'll do some research on it and we'll get back.
I mean, this argument seems to me to be very spurious. I'm as quick to criticise Microsoft when they do something wrong as anybody else.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you buy a Ford car, you'd be surprised if you found it had, you know, Holden hubcaps.
I would be very surprised if it had...
It's going to come with Ford accessories
and a Toyota steering wheel, and
that's right. But they're not going to ship somebody else's browser with that.
Yeah, I know, but you might be able to buy it without the Ford Cruise Control put in it, if you know what I mean, or you may be able to disable it if you didn't want to use it, type sort of thing. I guess where they're coming from.
Part of the problem is that the ability to read a web page, to read what's called HTML, which is the language that the web is written in, is fundamental to the whole way the computer works. It's not just used for browsing the web. It's used in formatting all kinds of things in all kinds of places, including emails and so on.
I think the point of it is, though, that Microsoft is 90% of the desktops around the world these days. Maybe coming down a little bit since the good old Halcyon days when everything was Microsoft. But if IE is forcibly installed on part of the operating system, then it's an unfair advantage because anyone can't turn it off. It means that you're not competing. And the people that were actually complaining about this time around was Opera, the Norwegian company that have the Opera web browser. So there you go. So there you go. That's Windows. And, of course, the other interesting news about Windows is the bugs have been discovered in the, you know, people are hocking a version 7 release candidate, putting their own bugs in it, and then obviously on passing it. Everyone's getting involved in that as well. So watch out. Only download it from the Microsoft site.
That was it. That was a news article about that at the start of the show.
Yep. And it's
a good thing to remind us in terms of Windows 7, but also this happens every time a new product comes out, that other people will package it up, some sort of malware with it and try and foist it off on you. It doesn't matter what you're downloading, make sure you get it from a trusted source. If you're downloading a Microsoft product, download it from Microsoft.
And whilst we're talking about operating system development and companies of this nature, let's talk about the other side. Apple tightens up iPhone developer rules. I think in the wake of the shaking baby... Apple have basically said, listen, guys, if you want to put stuff up on the iPhone apps store, update it, please. Don't just leave it there and hope for the best and it become a mouldy oldie and just disappear off. Because if you don't update your apps, we're going to take it off. It's basically what they've said. This is especially as OS 3 is now available to customers. They want you to
yeah. Well, the last thing they
update
want
us, please.
Is a whole heap of people who've got apps that they really like, but there's no version that'll work on version 3 of the phone.
That wouldn't happen in Macworld, would it?
It would, but would it's it? Interesting if they're tightening. I hadn't actually read about that, but they've actually been approving some reasonably controversial apps recently as well.
So. Have they what? Some that just see the light of day for a matter of moments and then disappear, never to be seen again.
Yes.
All right, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Justin Dunlop is in. Dr. Ron and Graham, hoping we're not keeping you awake over there on the other side of the panel. We're going to take a break. Graham needs a little lie down.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Police called to control crowds at a technology fair in Singapore.
The sale of Apple TVs has gone up a third in the past year.
How frustrating.
Very.
Twitter came to life like you wouldn't believe.
What next, I say?
Around about $10 billion from the NBN.
Well, that's a bit unusual, isn't it? I'm not sure what to make of that.
Those people who found themselves hacked turned into porn stars very quickly.
Entertaining.
Oh, look, Dr. Ron, I haven't seen you like that before.
Informative.
Like my old phone is at like 32 by 32 pixels.
Independent.
Well, that's impressive.
I smoke. That's right.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Radio.
Don't breathe this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Did you know that digital audio broadcasting started in Melbourne today?
I did not know that.
There you go. See, stick with us. You'll learn all sorts of interesting things. We're going to try and talk about that very shortly. We've just got to get the right people on the right phone at the right time, and we'll be able to do all that sort of stuff. So there you go.
Wow.
Keep an eye on that. Hey, the Tech Talk Radio crew, the people sitting here in the studio with associated partners, last Thursday headed off to the IMAX cinema in Carlton and caught up with the latest and greatest version of Star Trek, which hit the screens. And it was big, and it was loud, and just a word from everyone here on the panel. One word, choose your word carefully. How would you describe what you saw on the screen last Thursday night?
Awesome.
Exciting.
Impressive.
Yeah, that probably pretty well sums it up, I think. Yes, absolutely. Adam Turner had his view from the couch this week, from view from the IMAX, actually. And it sounded
view from the IMAX.
It actually sounded a bit like view from the IMAX. But one thing, which I've got some bad news for everybody, if you do wish to see an IMAX version of Star Trek, the new feature film, it's only on for 2 weeks at the IMAX. So if you're listening to us in Brisbane and all those sort of far-flung places, and you can get a cheap airfare to either Sydney or Melbourne to go and see it in the cinema, it's well worth it.
Absolutely.
Anyway, I'm not going to steal Adam's thunder this week. Here's this week's View from the Couch, or View from the IMAX Cinema in Carlton, just in Rathbound Street there, actually.
I couldn't believe it when the bartender told me who you are.
Why are you talking to me, man?
Your father was captain of a starship for 12 minutes. He saved 800 lives. Including yours. I dare you to do better. Enlist in Starfleet.
Do yourself a favor. Don't download the new Star Trek movie before you see it at the cinemas. I went to the Star Trek premiere at IMAX on Thursday night with the crew from Tech Talk Radio, and it was incredible. An awesome plot, an awesome picture, awesome sound. I saw every star in the sky. I felt the sound from every phaser blast pass through my body. I had tears in my eyes during the opening sequence. I thought I was going to burst from sheer exhilaration when young Kirk punched the stereo on that vintage Corvette and fired up the Beastie Boys. In short, it was an experience, a once-in-a-lifetime experience you can never recreate in your lounge room. You only get to watch a movie for the first time once. If you watch the new Star Trek first on some dodgy cam job downloaded from the internet, you're cheating yourself out of something special.
You will always be a child of two worlds and fully capable of deciding your own destiny. The question you face is, which path will you choose?
Are you a freighter, aren't you?
I will not allow you to lecture me.
Then why do you stop me?
Prepare to fire all weapons.
I
this ship.
That's exciting.
Space is disease and danger.
Threat and darkness and silence.
Buckle up.
This is not a paid plug for the copyright, please. Regular readers will know my views on downloading from the web. This is rather a piece of advice from one sci-fi fan to another. Our faith in J.J. Abrams was not misplaced. Just this once, gather together a few friends and put your faith back in the cinema experience. You won't regret it.
The wait is over.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You won't forget it. There was some really good talent in that film too, I must admit.
Yes.
You've got to have a cast, a baddie cast really well, don't you think, in all these villainous type sort of films, the baddie?
They say that that's the challenging role to play, yeah.
I think the whole cast
an unconvincing bad guy makes for a very unconvincing movie. But there's a lot of reports, though, that they feel that the baddie in this one's a bit disposable, and it's probably true, except it wasn't over the top. It wasn't a caricature of a baddie. He played a dad who went bad, so to speak, and I thought it was very believable.
Yeah, no, a very enjoyable film, very loud. The thing I really enjoyed about the experience at IMAX, apart from the fact that the screen was really, really big, it's the third biggest screen in Australia here in Melbourne, was the sound. The sound just like, towards the end of the film, I'm going, oh no, they're going to hyperspace again, hang on. Yeah.
The sound was very impressive, and not just the low rumble or the thump through the bottom of your seat, it was impressive through the whole range.
Now, what were some of the stats? We were having a look at the previews. It's 12,000 watts of sound and 60,000 watts of light, something like that?
No, they had two 15K lamps in that projector at the IMAX, which means that
15,000 watts.
Yeah, 15,000. They had two of those. So there's 30,000 watts of light on the screen. And as for the sound system...
Your typical light globe in your house is 100 watts.
Yeah, pales into insignificance, really, doesn't it? But it also, just the sound was... Oh, I've never heard a film like it. Mm. Whoever did the sound design. And the contrast between outer space, where there's nothing, quiet as a mouse, yet this battle rages. Then they come inside and all hell's breaking loose and the sound was accordingly.
Yeah, it was interesting. There were moments there where we had the silent space.
Yes.
Not for long, but long enough. Yeah, that's right. And there was silence in space, but there was also sound effects in space. They did a little bit of each way. But, it wasn't completely 2001
You've got to remember, in space, no one can hear you scream.
Yeah, well, this is the point. Well, you can hear the engine screaming past in apparently. Most of Star Trek, but but no, it was extremely good. I thought the visual effects and so on were very reminiscent of the new Battlestar Galactica.
Mm, I think a lot of people have said that. Well, certainly at the dinner table conversation after we saw the film. So to steal a line from Ian Molly Meldrum, do yourself a favour. Go and see that at an IMAX theatre in Melbourne as of...
And if you can't get to IMAX, at least get to a decent big cinema with proper sound.
Adam said it. Go and see it. Do yourself a favour. You only see a film once and go and see that. By the way, that's the very first view from a couch which has video associated with it. Did you see it on the radio just then? It was good, wasn't it? No, but seriously.
How do we get to see it?
If you go to the Tech Talk Radio website, and you'll see on the right-hand side, just underneath Adam's beard, you can click a link.
That's a fantastic little preview,
and
too.
And you can go and have a bit of a look at the video there and reminisce in Adam's view from the couch this week, which very timely. We don't normally do film reviews on Tech Talk Radio, but we have in this instance. Mm. There's a couple other good ones coming out shortly, too. Harry Potter Trailer 4 is out on iTunes movie trailers, and that starts in the cinemas in July, too. That will be technically...
Is it going to be IMAX?
Yes, IMAX'd? It is. It is in IMAX. Ooh, cool. It is in IMAX. So there's another one to set the calendar for as well, because that's the trailer says it's IMAX. One of the other interesting trivial bits, speaking of IMAX...
Third largest screen.
No. Go the other side of the screen. Come into the production environment.
Okay.
The IMAX cameras, which are, pretty sophisticated devices, they have a problem with them when they're shooting dialogue scenes, and that is everything has to be post-sunk because the cameras are so noisy. Did you know?
Yeah.
Because of the nature of the beast, they make such a clatter as the film goes through the gate.
So they have to go away and re-record the conversation.
Anything which is quiet, the camera can't be within QE of the thing because it's just too loud. They just can't record dialogue.
Mm.
So it all has to be done in post-production.
So is that the case for this Star Trek movie? Did they?
No, it wasn't shot in IMAX. It was a 70mm
print. Upscaled it.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, so anyway. All right, Tech Talk Radio, Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, JD, and Dr. Graham over there in the corner. Dr. Ron, it's got your name on this. Google Analytics now works on your Android. Is this correct?
Google Latitude
now works on your Android phone. Woo-hoo.
I said analytics, didn't I?
You did, but that's okay. We'll get back to that. No, you can't. Now, Latitude is a new service that Google are providing.
Settle on the forum.
Where you can have your location automatically updated on Google Maps. And if you share your account with another Google account holder, you can see each other's location on the map.
Yeah.
Now, I was...
Now, when I first got my Nokia phone, I could download this. I went straight to Google and downloaded it, and it all worked. So, surely on your Google phone, it would have come pre-installed.
That's what you would think.
That's what you would expect. But unfortunately, sadly, and quite bizarrely, the much-touted Google phone didn't support Latitude. Certainly not in Australia. But now, it does. And I noticed when I went into my Google Maps about a week ago, there was a new button, a Latitude button.
Did it just appear?
It just like appeared like that. So it's downloaded and updated itself. And
Harry Potter was using a phone, wasn't he?
I was very excited. And straight away I went in there. Because I had Google Latitude set up already on using a normal web browser on the internet, and I already shared my location with Andrew and a couple of other people and Graham, all of the contacts just pulled in. And straight away, I could punch your head with my left thumb, Graham, and I could see...
Did that give you great pleasure?
Well, it did, and I could see where you were there and then. And I've got to say...
Where was I?
I'm not sure. I think you were in Carlton when I first looked at it.
But still there.
He's still in Carlton.
It's where we had dinner the other night.
It is. But the update feature, the automatic update feature, works extremely well. Now, this is the... I'm talking about the Google phone, which Optus have got branded here as the Dream, the HTC Dream.
You could show everyone in the webcam.
I could show everyone. I could hold it up to the webcam there. I'll turn it on and make it do some nice things. And yes, so that device now, if you're using that on Optus or if you've purchased one outright like I have, you'll find that Latitude works. It's a lot of fun. I'm extremely impressed by how accurate it is.
Adam said that's a great camera Ron's got. Shame about the built-in phone.
Adam, a cynic is what an idealist calls a realist, and I can't dispute that comment. Now, I think you should try this out. If you're an HTC Dream user, have a look. Go into your Google Maps and see if Latitude is there. It's a lot of fun.
Very good. Happy with it? Is it working for you? How's your bandwidth?
The bandwidth is great. Bandwidth is fine. It's the battery life, which everyone is issues with.
Hasn't harmed your battery in
any
way?
No, it doesn't seem to harm the battery anyway. The way it finds the location is if you don't have GPS turned on, it uses the cellular network information to find out, or to make an educated guess as to where you are. For some reason, it puts Andrew about 10 kilometres away from where he lives when he's at home.
It does.
But that's okay. It works really well for me and...
Yeah, it sometimes puts me a fair way away from where I am, but it's better than nothing.
No, but seriously, I'm a long way away from where I am.
Now, you're not using the same phone network.
I'm several suburbs away from where I am.
Oh, right. Oh, okay, because you're on a different network. So, yeah, my network might have a higher density of base stations or something, so it gets a bit more accurate.
Who knows?
Maybe.
Good speculation.
Have a play around with it. It's working well.
Dr. Ron, you're a media server user, aren't you? You've got Windows thingy under your big TV at your place I've seen there.
I have a PC, which is a fundamental component of my audiovisual system. I don't use a Media Center software product.
Don't you? I thought you did.
No.
Oh.
I gave up on that shortly after installing it and playing around with it. And I'm looking at it at the moment. I'm looking at replacing the Windows operating system on the PC with a Linux distribution and installing Myth TV. Some such Media Center. But I'm open to comments and suggestions as to what I should do.
Jeff Gates, a friend of Tech Talk Radio, who came and visited us during the course of our summer break. He lives up in the sort of cooler part of the United States, up near the Great Lakes there. He runs an audio production facility and dabbles in video from time to time. He did come and see. He caught up with you too, didn't he, Dr. Ron?
He did. Yes, we caught up. Yeah, it was great to meet Jeff. He's helped us out a lot with the program over the years.
Yeah, he got a bus ticket over here and got on a plane and just kept going. So, and he popped in to say good day. But from time to time, he sends us wonderful reports. And media service is one of his interesting pet topics, I guess, especially with the PlayStation 3 out there and how he does it. Now, this is a perspective from the United States where they've got bandwidth to burn, according to our sources anyway, unlike here, but we might have one day. Anyway, here's Jeff talking about the current way he does, how would you call it, streaming, RSS feeds, all that sort of stuff, and watching video on his system over there through a media center.
It goes hand in hand with what Adam was talking about.
It does.
Last week with the
TiVo. This is
the
perspective from the other side of the
planet. This is what happens on the other side of the planet.
Since I bought my PlayStation 3 for my kids in December 2007, I've experimented quite often with different media server programs.
I've tried most of the usual candidates, but most had limitations on streaming video straight from the web to watch on the PS3. Today I'm focusing on two of the best media server programs that I've found in the last year for doing just that. I will be explaining how they integrate with the PS3. However, they may work well with the Xbox and other devices too, but I have not tested that. Media servers in general can also handle audio and photos, but my main focus here will be video uses. The first program we'll cover is T-Versity. It has grown steadily over the past year from a beta app to a mainstream media server. T-Versity is an easy-to-use media server for streaming content from the web, such as vodcasts and playing local content from your PC. It handles streaming web content better than any other program I've seen. I have watched many of the HD content vodcasts on my PS3 without any issues. Just put in the RSS feed address from your favorite vodcast and then walk over to your PS3 and watch it on your TV. I just throw every RSS feed I'm interested in into T-Versity and it does the rest. The only drawback is that sometimes the PS3 has trouble decoding some codecs that providers use on the web. QuickTime movie files are not supported, but MP4s are. If you really want to see a vodcast that is not compatible with your media player, T-Versity can translate that stream to a codec that your media player understands. But this uses system resources heavily on the computer that T-Versity is installed on. Plus, the quality of the stream suffers because it's recoded. The best way to set up T-Versity is to pass the stream straight through from the web, and not use the ones you're having trouble with. What I most like T-Versity for is streaming content that I store on my PC, like DVDs that I've made into transport streams, which is fairly easy these days, or shows that I watch on my cable system using Clear QAM. My WinTV card directly saves MPEG-2 transport streams right from the station to the hard drive. Once the stream's on the hard drive, it is available through T-Versity on the PS3. Using T-Versity is a good way to save files to the PS3 as well. The PS3 will only read FAT32 keys, and most HD files are over the 4GB file limit. There is not a file limit for saving files from your PC to your PS3 through T-Versity. So, that's the scoop on T-Versity. Let's talk about a second and more revolutionary media server. In fact, I run this one in tandem with T-Versity. The media server is PlayOn Media Center. PlayOn Media Center is a product of MediaMail. MediaMail has partnered with Hulu, CBS, Netflix, Amazon On Demand Video, YouTube, ESPN, and others. PlayOn gets its RSS feed information straight from these services and presents the feed in a user-friendly menu structure that is clean and navigable on the PlayStation 3. It lists shows in alphabetical order. Click on a favorite show and episodes pop up with pictures and descriptions. Browsing thousands of on-demand TV episodes and feature films is a breeze. Plus, if I set up subscriptions for favorite shows, the episodes appear automatically in the new episode user queue. Hulu, CBS, Fox, CNN, and all the others use the same transport stream technology to deliver the shows in better than standard definition 16:9 quality. Another feature of PlayOn is the ability to rent movies instantly from your Netflix or Amazon On Demand account. Walk to your PC, rent a movie, and walk over to your PS3 and watch it instantly. PlayOn remembers all the passwords and logins for accounts. I must admit, I have really thought about getting rid of my cable service and just use PlayOn with access to these services. Unlike T-Versity that is a free download, PlayOn does charge a one-time $30 US fee. But if you scrap the channels on your cable system or satellite dish, you'll pay for that in less than a month. For Tech Talk Radio, this is Jeff Gates.
Wouldn't it be great to be able to scrap your cable and just rely on the internet? Oh, that's a pipe dream in this country, isn't it?
It is. It'd be fantastic to be able to do it. And someone will do it eventually. It'll happen. It'll be in our lifetime, hopefully. But
when we get 100 megabits to the front door.
Well, yeah, it's just not there yet. We don't have the infrastructure yet to support it.
That was Jeff Gates. Lovely report on what it's like on the other side of the world, where obviously the pipe to your door is not a problem.
And also the availability of content is not a problem. A lot of the things he's talking about, the downloads from the from the TV networks, from CBS, from NBC, even Hulu.
Which we can't see almost, here. Unless
almost
you know
all
good
of
proxy.
Their content, yeah, is US only. If you're outside the US, you don't exist. It's another, you know, Americans who don't believe in the rest of the world.
And see, going back to what we were talking about last week, too, the pipes from Australia to the United States are somewhat limiting, and as a result, the bandwidth is somewhat limiting. So hopefully, with what Pipe Networks is doing, and even Telstra, they're running a new cable between here and Hawaii, that things might open up a little better to content from the US.
And then all we have to do is make Australia a state of the United States, and we'll be right.
Yes.
Oh, Graham.
But it's not that, obviously. It's they want to protect some of their funding. So if you subscribe, they want you to subscribe locally and pay a local provider that they've got a license fee to and so forth. So it's just like the region encoding on your DVDs, I would think.
Yes. That was something funny too. My parents managed to, they've got a Blu-ray player and they've got a standard DVD player because they've gone HD in the other room. They hired a DVD copy on the weekend of the Indian film that's been acclaimed. That's a dog. What does it call it? See, I've got problems.
Slumdog Millionaire. I can help you with that one.
I've got movie
problems.
Couldn't
help you with the last one. Help you with Slumdog.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Thanks. Anyway, pop it into a regular DVD player in this country, and it works. Pop it into the Blu-ray player, which is a Sony Blu-ray player, and it said, "Nah,
no,
wasn't going to play." Came up with a region issue. I thought, oh, that's really odd. I've never heard about that before, but there you go. Something, whether it's a gremlin in the works of region encoding on a DVD that a Blu-ray doesn't,
or
player
the,
doesn't like.
The DVD player perhaps didn't have region encoding turned on, or...
Well, it could have, but it was just a DVD from the local big video library.
So it should
release.
Have been region 4, yeah.
You would have thought so.
I would have been very interested to have a look at that DVD and find out what region it was set to.
By the time I got over there, it had been shipped back to the video library from whence it came, so I didn't actually manage to do that. But there you go. Anyone else has had any funny little idiosyncrasies with their Blu-ray player? Let us know. It'd be interesting to see what happens, because that's a good bug, that one. All right, Tech Talk Radio, back with more in a moment.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Do you Twitter? We do. Why not follow us? For the Tech Talk Radio Twitter feed, follow TTR2008 or visit techtalkradio.com.au. to see what all the presenters are currently tweeting.
We've now got the technology. It's time to get silly with it.
Are people still using Internet Explorer?
That would be a shame.
Do you reckon it'll take up? I reckon the youth of today will love it.
Like a Dr. Evil's boardroom.
Yeah, it does change the way the browser behaves.
Oh, I'm excited. Don't worry about Kaspersky. Get into your local road sign.
Yeah.
I like a fresh install, me personally, but nonetheless.
Entertaining.
I was in until you said maggots.
Informative.
How do you decide who to follow?
Independent.
Oh, aren't they the biggest crock?
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
No.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's one weird technology radio show.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, JD and GC here in the studio. Everyone's comparing notes on their mobile phones at the moment. They're playing Latitude again, so yeah, bit of fun. As Adam said the other night, haven't you guys lost the novelty yet? Well, no, Dr. Ron's just got on his Android, so... he's off and running.
The novelty's just started.
Absolutely.
Living the dream. Living the Google dream.
Yeah, well, that's why they call it the dream. It's the wannabe, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hey, we mentioned earlier on in the program the ACCC and telcos at the moment.
Oh, yes, Dodo.
Good old Dodo's in the news again. And this isn't the first time for Dodo. Remember a while back they got into trouble for breaching the Do Not Call register? On the government's... don't harass us type thing. Some telemarketing company that they used offshore rang people which were on the list.
That's right, yes, and they were fined, I'll tell you, $147,000 in October last year.
That's a good whack for a bunch of people running an internet service providing company.
For a flightless bird, yeah.
Yeah, well anyway, the ACCC are having a bit of a look at the moment in respect to ripping off consumers again. There's something to do with a offering free computers and things like that, which allegedly is not the case. And the ACCC has been taken to task for the false advertising again. The Consumer Watchdog has blown the whistle on the multi-service telco reseller. And let's just emphasise that. They are a reseller. They just buy bandwidth from, I believe, Telstra. I could be wrong there. They might actually get it from others. But I think last time I looked, it was majority from Telstra. And they were trying to resell, sorry, the people at the multi-reseller telco over its mobile and broadband cap advertisements, caps being the issue of the day here, with Optus are doing the same sort of thing as well. Dodo has agreed to refund customers who are enticed to subscribe to a bundled mobile and broadband plan by advertising free gifts, including, here we go, the EEE PC, handsets, and yep. cash and fuel.
Yep. They were actually offering those things, and they were giving those things to customers who signed up on those plans. That the issue that the ACCC had was that they weren't advertising maybe as openly, that there were other plans as well, which were comparable in value and service, but cost less money. So on one hand, you could have this, but on the other hand, well, you could actually pay a lot less money if you didn't want to actually receive the gifts and get the same
so
service.
So you can have a free green widget when you buy a blue widget, but you have to pay for the green widget,
That's right. Or you could just pay for the same service and not worry about the widgets. It's really dumb. So the ACCC took umbrage with this and issued them with one of those orders, a court-enforceable order.
When will they learn? When will people learn? Optus, take heed. They're up to no good as well.
You had a bit of a go at Optus at the start of the show.
I did. But have you seen what they've done? They've really upped the cap, which is what the ACCC is looking at the moment. And the consumers have to look at the fine print. And the fine print of their new caps, basically saying, well, you get this huge cap, but you can only use half of it.
Yeah.
And the way you can only use half of it means that, let's say it's a $600 cap. Everyone goes, wow, that's pretty good for $29 or whatever the price is. I'm not 100% sure.
So I can ring it.
Nobody's ever sold phone calls for that much.
No, exactly. But what happens is Optus say, well, you can use half of it on Optus to anyone, which includes people on the Optus network and includes people on every network. And then they've got this thing called Optus to Optus, which is what the other half is used for. But let's say, for example, you're Optus to anyone, you're ringing Optus customers, that counts in that portion of the cap. So once you've exceeded that half the cap, $300 of a $600 cap, you can only call Optus to Optus people if you want to keep yourself under the cap. Everything else is at something ridiculous like 80 cents a minute. that's the devil in the fine
print.
So
how do you monitor your usage? Do you have to go to the website, presumably? You have an account and you have a website you can look at
to see if you've reached your cap yet?
Yeah.
I can say that I'm not an Optus customer and I don't know. There are people out there who are and they can probably tell us. It'll have something to do with an animal, that's for sure. They tend to do that. I've seen that.
There'll be a raccoon or a bandicoot or a giraffe involved.
Yeah, have you seen the possessed one in the newsletter today?
Yeah, I did. Had horns. Were they? Is that your doing?
No. What's the penalty for vandalism these days?
I wondered about the horns.
Did you? But anyway, I guess the moral of the story is, once again, if you're a consumer, don't just race in and buy a cap. You'd probably be tempted by an iPhone with version 3 software on it, shake the baby, and
absolutely,
you'll get it on a cap like that, and you'll be going, uh-oh. I wonder if there's any data allowance. I wonder if you can surf the web only to Optus websites after you've used your cap. Now, there's a thought. Sorry, marketing department, let's not get into that, hey? So, there you go. Other interesting news this week, which I thought was very romantic. LPs are back in fashion. Did you know?
The old vinyl is
coming back with a vengeance.
And there was
why?
There was a big screed on it in the Green Guide a couple of weeks ago.
We just got rid of vinyl.
Well, apparently,
we just got rid of the turntable in this radio station, and now it's coming back.
Apparently, according to Greg Barrowman, the editor of Australian Hi-Fi magazine, he reckons that we're yearning for what we lost when analog music yielded to the digital environment.
Greg, you know, I bought a second-hand turntable a couple of weeks ago, and I had great fun getting my old vinyl records out again. It was fantastic.
Really? Have you got some? I couldn't tell you where mine were. They're damn heavy things. Very heavy, especially when you had lots of them. But then again, so are CDs. Anyway, CDs have no personality. They're set and forget, he said. With vinyl, it's a ritual. You slide the LP out of its sleeve, then deftly remove it from the inner dust jacket. Remember those crepe sort of plasticky things that you used to...
And try and avoid slamming into the car that stopped in front of you. How does that work? No, I'm not yearning for vinyl. Who is this, Greg?
Greg Borrowman.
Oh, he's what?
From the editor of Australian Hi-Fi magazine.
Well, it's been ages since I've heard a hiss and a crackle when I've been listening to music.
Oh, you should listen to FM radio as you're driving around town, have a listen.
He's one of these fanatical hi-fi people that spends $80,000 on setting up his lounge room with a turntable right in the middle and one lounge chair only in the center of the room, and that's what he does.
Yeah.
And that's good. Everyone has to have a hobby. That's not my hobby.
But have you seen that you can actually now buy vinyl again in some of... I think JB sell it, one of the big yellow...
I didn't know that.
Chain sell it.
That worries me.
And they're very expensive. Like, they're not...
Isn't it you get a pass to download it off the internet, plus the vinyl to do some scratching on if you wish.
And Adam Turner says most CDs have hiss added, so they sound like an LP. This is my point. It's ridiculous. We spent all that technology and all those years and all that money on introducing this fantastic new digital standard, and these people are promoting and prolonging.
You know what?
18th century.
I reckon this is the record company's last hurrah. You can't pirate a vinyl, can you? Whereas you can easily copy a CD. You just pop it in there and hit disc copy. You can't put your vinyl into your record player and hit disc copy.
The ultimate DRM.
It is, isn't it?
It's a slap in the face to everyone who illegally copied music CDs. Record companies are going back to vinyl. Graham, what do you have to say on the matter?
Absolutely nothing.
Graham is itching to say something.
No. It's just silly.
But how many... Have you got vinyl? I used to have a collection. Obviously, JD's owned up to having a couple of vinyl things in the
vinyl on the floor in my kitchen.
Well, there's the problem, isn't it?
I have vinyl...
You should put them back in their sleeves.
Vinyl chairs. I don't have anything that I listen to that's made of vinyl.
They're a bit big for the car, too.
They are too big for the car. JD, so you did it as a... But one of those novelty things that you do with the children, like,
well, those that have been to my house,
this is the way we used to listen to music in the olden days.
Those that have been to my house will realise I still have two turntables in a rather large case that I built as a teenager, still in my lounge room, totally destroyed by my 4-year-old, I might point out, but nevertheless, it's still there. And I decided it was time to actually get a new player so that I could actually listen to some records occasionally. So I did, for the princely sum of $20 off eBay. So there you go.
I've noticed that one of the other electronic companies that shall remain nameless have a record to MP3 player converter. So you put you actually buy a turntable, which I don't know how good the stylus would be, but you put your record on and it. Yeah, there you go. See, I don't know, even know how much it is. I've just heard about them, but that's the state of vinyl, really, isn't it?
Yeah, you can buy turntables now that have got, instead of audio sockets on the back, they have a USB port, and you plug it into your computer to.
I can see a use for that if you have vinyl, which has got something that is irreplaceable, and you want to save it and you want to make some sort of backup of the recording, even if you don't listen to it that way, if you want to listen to it on your vinyl. I can understand why you'd want a device like that. But
look, we've got one here in the studio, Exhibit A. I'm resting my papers on at the moment. I thought we got rid
of that thing. Why is it still in here?
Oh, well, there you go.
And that's got to go too.
Oh, yes.
He says, pointing at the audio cassette player.
Oh, remember,
I've got one of them as well.
Have you got an 8-track?
No.
No.
Don't tell me. I'm looking around the studio very, very nervously.
Audio cassettes are the work of the devil, but I did always want an 8-track. I've never had an 8-track, and I always wanted one just for curiosity.
Why don't you go prowling the nature strips with Adam, because that's where he got his turntable from. So you might find an 8-track somewhere out there. And
USSR in the forum says we used to copy vinyl to cassettes, though.
Yes.
The cassettes were...
Yep. And then you had to do that
because you didn't want to wear out your vinyl because it would deteriorate with friction. And
you got all the pops and crackles and turntable rumble from your turntable combined with the wow and flutter of your cassette tape and its hiss.
Yeah, but in the car at 100 clicks on the freeway, you didn't notice, did you?
Why do you think they're always on the side of the road?
There's one thing of the modern era. We miss having the streams of magnetic tape around the street signs.
That's right.
I have seen the odd VHS tape that's ended up that way. I don't know whether people are doing VHSs in their car.
You don't very often see crushed CDs on the side of the road, do you?
No. Come to mention it, yeah, I have seen a few. Okay. Normally they're handwritten and they've been scratched and thrown out the window because I don't like this disc anymore, and off it goes.
I've heard people refer to their home burned CDs as being a mixtape, which is a curious...
A mixtape, as opposed to a mix CD.
Oh, doing your own compile.
Because you used to make a mixtape on cassette.
I've heard them referred to as coffee coasters.
Yeah, well, is that...
Is that too?
That's when they don't come out of the disc player properly. I mean, the burner properly.
Yeah.
When you've had an issue.
Yeah,
with power spike.
Which my burner's doing regularly at the moment.
I'll buy a new one. They're cheap. They're only $30 these days.
It's a whole new computer job, but...
Scruffy Buzzer says, discarded flash memory in the gutter.
Yeah,
well, there's something.
Well, soon there might be.
Yes. We should do a poll. That's very interesting.
Yeah, the crunch of the USB drives as you...
My USB memory stick got run over recently.
It still works, doesn't it?
It still works. My USB memory stick,
have
I
you one of those
keyring.
Titanium things, have you? Because about the only thing...
No, it's a cheapy plastic one. It fell off my keyring into the road and someone ran over it, but it still works.
Oh, Exhibit A, there it is.
The camera.
Good. Oh, it's a bit bent,
it's bent, but it still works. It's a Kingston, if anyone's...
Yeah. Well, there you go. It's a good ad for them. Yeah. Hey, we should... It'd be interesting to see what people find in their hard rubbish collections of a technological nature. Not interested in the chairs and tables you might have got, but... Yeah, obviously Adam can find the odd turntable. I don't think people would have them to throw out anymore, would they? Unless they're at the back of an old radio station or something like that. Anyway, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're running over time tonight. Hello to wherever you are around the country, whether you're listening to us in New Zealand, here in Melbourne, or on the internet. Come and join us, chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
Internet Explorer 8 officially came out of beta during the course of the week.
Images depicting a man vomiting outside a London pub were removed from the site.
Give it a try if you haven't.
I got stuck by our own spam filter.
Yeah, it's good like that. It works well.
There is nothing that would surprise me with what kids do online.
With many years with experience.
Entertaining.
You're an idiot. It's only three words.
Informative.
These new hard drives are all solid state.
Independent.
They need constant poking.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tricky thing, the English language.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
That you are. Welcome back to the last segment before the Oddspot Gadget and Website of the Week.
The penultimate segment.
Is it?
Yes.
There you go. You learn something every day, the English language. Apparently it's a tricky thing.
It is.
According to some. Interesting news from across the Tasman this week. The New Zealand government Trans-Tasman cable plan falls flat. Apparently the New Zealand government $15 million plan to encourage industry investment in a new cable is not going to happen because no one took an interest in it.
No
one wants to pay. Yeah, well, in these days of global financial crisis, why would you do what the Australian government's doing? Pay for it out of their own pocket. They didn't want to pay here either, did they? No. When you look at it. So according to researchers... according to the Research and Educational Advanced Network of New Zealand, a government-owned company set up to operate a high-speed telecommunications network for research and education. There were several parties that were planning on investing in the new cable, but they required too much of a commitment. So there you go. We're definitely global financial crisis. Just
times are tough.
There you go. Just take a leaf out of the Rudd government here in this country and do it yourself and make it a government-owned asset, which means that... hopefully things will, you know, they're not lining some poor CEO's pockets with big bucks. Wondering when they're going to announce what Sol gets to walk away with. That'd be coming up shortly, wouldn't it? Because his tenure finishes end of June.
June. We'll find out.
Yeah. All right. Stay tuned. We'll soon see. There'll be an uproar, I'm sure, which way it goes. eBay to take on iTunes with digital music sales. Did you hear about this, boys?
No.
Online auction house eBay is set to go ahead with, set to go head to head with Apple's highly successful iTunes site by forming a joint venture with record label Universal Music Australia to sell digital music. Now, let me tell you, Universal Music is a very, very big record company. When we do our production stuff, they send us the biggest amount of music and the biggest amount of CDs known than any other record company. So bigger eBay, than Sony and all that sort of stuff.
So eBay are going to sell a product as opposed to a service now?
Yes, they are. Mm. You can download it. Now, obviously, there has to be a hook, and the hook is that they're going to be cheaper than what you can buy on the Apple site, iTunes.
iTunes Store.
Single tracks will be sold at $1.59 and albums at $15.99, which is a dollar cheaper than Apple's iTunes, the most popular digital music store
in
the world.
What does it say there about DRM? Anything?
No. Digital tracks will be sold on the site in an unrestricted MP3 format, meaning the files can be played and exchanged on most media players. Is that the answer you wanted, Dr. Ron?
It is. Unrestricted.
Unrestricted, but they're not going
they
any...
They can be played on most media players.
If only they were 320 kilobits per second downloads, that would be good, but they're not telling us how good the downloads are. And in this day of high-speed internet broadband, what's the difference between a few bits amongst friends? You want 320, wouldn't you?
So do you think they're charging Universal the on fee for selling their product, as they do everybody else?
I don't know. Probably. Well, no, maybe they don't have to because they
pay
stitch us
PayPal
everywhere else.
And,
Well, yes, it hasn't come online yet, so it'd be interesting to see what they actually do, whether you have to, they force you to pay through PayPal here in Australia. Probably on
the
cards, really, isn't
charged.
It? Yes, that's very true. So what do you think? Another online music store, as if we haven't got enough? Or is this just the way it's going to go? We're going to get more and more of this stuff. Next thing you know, Dr. Ron's online music store will pop up shortly and he'll be selling via PayPal.
I think it's interesting that it is DRM-free. It shows that the market's finally decided that,
people do value not having those insane restrictions on their music.
Well, in this day and age, as you were talking about earlier, I think, Graham, the compilation CD.
Yeah.
Like, in the online world, I would suggest, based on my buying habits, that the album has gone out the door. If you want to buy a single track, then online is a great place to buy it. Whereas my buying sort of patterns, if I want to buy an album, I head off to a shop and buy the whole silvery CD. Optical disc thing, which I still am quite attached to, despite the vinyl people.
There's a whole generation of people around, perhaps even a second generation now, that don't quite get the concept of the album, you know, that you play the album through, you know, from start to finish in order, and that it's a story.
And the benefit of the CD is you don't have to turn it over.
Yes.
Album being a legacy word from the good old vinyl days. Gee, vinyl's making a comeback, isn't it?
Mm.
We're even talking about tonight.
I think the word album is older than that, even.
Really?
I bought lots and lots of singles, and of course that was the whole A-side, B-side thing.
Mm.
Well, yeah, whatever happened to the B-side? Because they used to test the market with the B-side, didn't they?
The B-side's now obscure album tracks.
Yeah, which get buried into nothing, so they can't even test it. Like, you know, radio stations can't go, let's play the B-side and turn it over and give it a whirl.
Mm. Yeah, bored with the A-side, let's go for the B-side.
Yeah. So, anyway, there you go. Apple is going to be given a run for their money by eBay and PayPal. Maybe, yeah.
Maybe.
Seems believing.
Apple will still have the huge advantage of the iStore being integrated into iTunes, which is integrated into your iPod.
Yeah, they're going to take over the world, aren't they?
And your iPhones, and you just download it straight to your player.
Yep.
Yeah. So if you get another player out there that can surf the internet and download, like the Android phone presumably will be able to, if it can't already, then you'd be right. But at the moment, there's not many of those products around.
Mr. Two on the chat says no DRM on iTunes. He actually bought an album from them. Just recently.
Yeah, only on some iTunes.
Yeah, I've got to say, I think it's not right across the board yet, is it?
No, it's not, no. And the quality is different. There's different qualities. Someone earlier said that the quality on iTunes is up to 256K, which is quite good for MP3 or AAC.
What?
There's different...
AAC? What's that?
That's the codec that Apple used to sell their music in. It's another way of compressing music other than MP3.
Okay. Does it only play in an Apple device?
No. Other things can play it.
Okay.
The thing that infuriates me with iTunes is that they're... When you look at all of the tracks, if you're searching for something...
Mobile Me.
No. When you're looking at all of the fields, like the artist name and the album name and the length of the track, it doesn't have the sample rate in there, so you don't know what the quality is going to be.
That would be really good, wouldn't it?
Well, it would be. It makes sense to me to be looking at that, and you think, oh, if it's that much and it's only 128 kilobits per second, that's going to sound pretty grungy.
Or whether it has DRM.
That's right, or whether, as Adam Turner said, do I just go and steal it or rip it off a CD or something and be done with it? You have to make a decision, don't you, as to how you're going to get this music and how you're going to get it in the format and the quality in which you want it.
I must admit, I do enjoy buying CDs online. You know, click the box, put your money in, and the next thing you know, the Australia Post man brings you a CD in the mail. That's good. Saves on time, petrol, and all sorts of other things. You just click the box. And they're normally relatively the same price as if you buy it in a shop. And especially if you buy a few, it can make a value for money because it just brings your postage down. So stick to that. Buy the old CDs. They're good. Hey, Nintendo defies the recession with record profits. People obviously aren't going out anymore. They're not subscribing to Foxtel, so they're buying PlayStation and Wii's and
I think you'll find Nintendo's the Wii, actually.
Yeah, no, I'm just making a gross generalisation about all the different gaming things. People are now buying those to sit at home and play on rather than actually go out. And Nintendo are reaping the benefits of that with all these new little gadgets. They basically had record profits for the year to March, saying the video game industry was proving to be recession-proof. Well, I'd agree with that, especially now with the ability to get games online.
Well, people are going to be staying in more. They're going to be looking at, rather than going out and spending lots of money at restaurants and going to the movies like we all did the other night, because we earn billions of dollars from Tech Talk. But
no, we didn't. We just needed a hit.
Yeah. Most people are going to be staying in a lot more, aren't they? And I suppose chucking on the games console, whether it's, as you said, the Xbox or the PlayStation or the Wii.
There's a few ads for them on the telly at the moment too, I've noticed. Olivia
Nintendo,
John,
ONJ is pretty big here with Nintendo, pushing the Nintendo stuff. Yeah.
Good to see she had a wrist strap on her little handheld remote control, so it didn't go through a big flat screen telly. Very handy sort of thing. You're a game person, aren't you? Do you buy games regularly, or you just go back and rehash your old ones, Dr. Ron?
A bit of both.
How often do you use it?
Once every couple of weeks. My wife uses it more than I do. She likes playing all the music quiz games
Oh, you were telling me about this. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wheel of Fortune or something.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. The Buzz music quiz things. Yeah, she has some friends over and, yeah, they always end up whacking the PlayStation on.
I've often wondered how, because they ask questions, don't they? And you got to buzz like you do on a game show? Is that
yeah, you
works?
Buzz in and you answer the questions. Yeah.
Have you been through the questions yet? Like, or do they
I've
have
never
that many
seen
questions?
A repeat. No, they say that if you have a memory card, which we do, we've got an extra memory card plugged in the front of the thing, then it reduces the incidence of repeated questions. I don't think I've ever seen a repeat question. Okay. I'm sure it would happen. Eventually, you would exhaust the question bank, but then you just go out and buy another game, I suppose.
Well, exactly. That's probably version two. Now, Nintendo were saying that the DS, the little handheld game that everyone's been buying, has sales have slumped a little bit in that, but the Wii has been fairly steady. And I guess that's where you want to invest, in the home environment, because you put one of those things into a big, you know, nice flat screen monitor, they look pretty good. Have you played a video game with HDMI going into your big flat screen?
Yeah, I'm using HDMI at the moment. It looks pretty good. It's pretty sharp. Yeah, yeah, it's not bad.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Back soon with OddSpot Gadget and Website of the Week.
Suffering is like a tax. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
Let's face it, Telstra has a huge PR problem.
It's called the Integrated Public Number Database.
Hopefully that's not what they're talking about.
No. Do you block them, do you?
I do.
Yeah, this is what happened, yeah.
This is what happened.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yep.
Good use of technology.
Adam, you're too far gone to be saved now.
Entertaining.
How can you work in IT and not drink coffee?
Informative.
Boffany, techie propeller head, Vicky.
Independent.
So SMS is not an on-time delivery system.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And if you get Inga from Sweden showing her wares.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. This thing is amazing.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
The V-Live. I think that's how it's pronounced. V-I-L-I-V.
So it's a V-Line. That's a train, isn't it?
V-Live. It's the Real Pocket PC S5. This is a portable media player, but it's not just a portable media player. It's also a pocket PC, a sat-nav, and a digital TV receiver. How good's that?
Sensational.
The S5 has the specs of a netbook computer with an Intel Atom 1.33 GHz processor and 1 GB of RAM with a 60 GB hard disk drive. It runs Windows XP. It has 802.11g Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. It has a 4.8-inch touchscreen with an on-screen QWERTY keyboard, fully functional GPS receiver.
Wow.
And a windscreen cradle is included if you want to use it in your car as a GPS. It's got DVB-T television receiver inbuilt.
Great, we don't transmit in this country, so don't worry about that yet.
And a fold-out... No, the normal one, I think. And
oh, terrestrial. Yeah, we do. Sorry, yeah. It's an H. Sorry.
And a fold-out telescopic antenna.
Ooh.
How good's that?
Pretty good.
If you want to have a look at this little device, go to My VLive. I'll spell it for you because it's a bit confusing, the domain name. My... VILIV.
Has it got a can opener? Adam wants to know.
Com. If you speak English like I do, click on the link in the top right corner which says Inglish, and the website will make a lot more sense. But I think that's a terrific little gadget, the VLIV Real Pocket PC S5.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
Here's one for people who are interested in search engine optimization or just curious to see how well your website's going. I was at an SEO meeting during the course of the week and came across this great little plugin for Firefox and for Internet Explorer.
SEO?
It's called, SEO, search engine optimization, and it's called SEO Quake, and it goes under the same name, SEOQUAKE.com. And you'll find a great little thing that you can install, a little plugin that you can install on your browser. And at a glance, push of a button, right-click, however you choose to use it, you can see interesting things about your site, like keywords, entities, and the respect it has amongst its elders, like as in with Google and PageRank and things like that.
Oh.
And it also, the age of a domain, which is very relevant when it comes to doing search engine optimization and things like that. And
is it relevant from a credibility point
of view? Absolutely.
So if it's 2 days old, then a site that's 2 years old will probably rank higher.
You mean the sandpit with the kiddies, actually, if it was only a couple of days old? Because that's what spammers do. They get domains, they call it xyzgibbles.com, and which means nothing to anyone, and spam from it. And of course, you can't be indexed, can it? So
interesting.
There you go. SEOquake.com is a great place to go and pick yourself up a little plugin which you can put into your browsers and see how well your websites or even that of your competitors are working.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
A 16-year-old North Carolina boy arrested for allegedly making a bomb threat against Purdue University.
What?
Who? Had a secret identity as a superstar in an unusual online subculture, one dedicated to making prank phone calls for live internet and a live internet audience. According to his mother, this doesn't make any sense at all. I heard the prank phone calls he
None
made.
None of them do, Dr. Ross.
Says Annette Lunderby of Oxford. They were really funny prank phone calls. He made phone calls to, like, Walmart. Oh, good on him. Lunderby confirmed that her son was known online as Tyrone, a celebrity in a prank-calling community that grew late last year out of the troublemaking /B/board on 4chan.
Good.
Using VoIP conferencing software, as many as 300 listeners would gather on a server run by Tyrone, listen to him and other amateur voice actors make often crude and racist phone calls. Anyway, he got sick of doing that and he made a bomb threat.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
That'll fix him.
That'll do it every day.
Yeah, good. That was our Odd Spot anyway.
All right, that was it, Tech Talk Radio for this week. Thanks for joining us wherever you are around the world, and we'll see you same time next week. Happy birthday to Adam, and go and see Star Trek at the IMAX before it's too late. Do yourself a favour, you won't regret it. All right, till next week. Oh, by the way, go and have a look at the video clip for Adam's View from a Couch. It's on the Tech Talk Radio website. Click the link and watch the video. First one we've done. Send us your feedback. See you next week, everyone. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.